Hi everyone, I'm Brian, one of the pastors here, and I'm really happy to be able to be here with you today and just talking a little bit more about what we're addressing in this series for Lent. We've been taking a look at John's Gospel and especially the seven I am statements that we find there. And as we've been coming to understand, really Jesus in these statements is speaking not just as a human, that is Jesus of Nazareth, but as God, this cosmic Christ. So we're gonna continue thinking about that today. And today actually is your lucky day because it's two for one day here at Cedar Ridge. We're gonna take a look at two I am statements, two images that Jesus uses of himself. The first one that we're gonna look at is I am the gate, and then I am the shepherd. And both of these show up in John chapter 10. We'll be taking a look at that, but I just want to say that, you know, this John 10 is not necessarily a smooth flowing narrative. It starts out with this word picture or figure of speech, and then it kind of expands on the metaphors that are used there. Now, sometimes Jesus switches back and forth between the metaphors and uses them in different ways. And the text even tells us the folks who first heard him speaking didn't exactly get what he was talking about. So this text can be a bit tricky. And anyways, we're going to read it through in its entirety at the beginning. And then I'm just going to try to share three themes that I think stand out from this passage. So here's John chapter 10. Jesus is speaking and says, "Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters the gate by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice." Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved or kept safe. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now, the hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him?" But others said, "These are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" Then came the festival of dedication, or Hanukkah, at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews who were there gathered around him, saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly." Jesus answered, "I did tell you, but you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name testify about me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one. Again, his Jewish opponents picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus said to them, I have shown you many good works from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? We are not stoning you for any good work, they replied, but for blasphemy, because you, a mere man, claim to be God. Well, these words represent some images that are both beautiful and endearing and also controversial and scandalous, especially at the time, as we see. But here's the first thing that really strikes me from this entire passage, and that is Jesus boldly claims to be the embodiment of the divine shepherd. You know, really, it's true of all these I am statements in John's gospel. Jesus is equating himself with the I am, this God of Scripture who has revealed God's self to the people of Israel as I am. And that's how Jesus introduces this. And certainly at that last verse that we read, that's clearly how his opponents understood what he was saying eventually. Said he's equating himself with God. So let's take a look at the imagery Jesus uses here. And the first one is that of the shepherd. The Hebrew scriptures really are full of references to this metaphor of shepherd referring to God. All the way back in Genesis, Jacob refers to God as his shepherd, as do the prophets Isaiah, and Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, and Micah, and Zechariah. And certainly the Psalms do as well, and obviously Psalm 23, which we had as our opening prayer, is probably the most famous passage in the Old Testament. And it declares that the Lord is my shepherd. Along with this, there was even the hope that God would come to earth to shepherd the flock. And there were hints that God's promised Messiah would personify God's shepherding care for God's people. So if you were to interview a person on the street back in the first century, a Jewish person, and asking them, what's probably the most familiar image of God that you have, certainly at the top of the list, it would be a shepherd. God's relationship to God's people is like a good shepherd's relationship to the sheep. Yahweh is the shepherd of God's flock, Israel. Well, John's gospel, then, you remember, it starts out, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and then the Word became flesh. So the Christ, the Word, the Logos, we also see, is the image of the invisible God. And so when Jesus says, I am the Good Shepherd, he is really saying, look, I am the incarnation of the divine shepherd. I am the true king, the true leader of God's people. In chapter 10, verse 30, he says it point blank, I and the Father are one. Now we know what it looks like when God comes to shepherd God's people. God's relationship to God's people is like Jesus' relationship to people. And so as we saw, though, there was this polarized response. Some people believed what Jesus was saying. The leaders there demonized him, really, and tried to stone him for claiming to be God. There's a second theme, I think, that emerges from these various verses, and that is Jesus epitomizes good spiritual leadership in contrast to bad spiritual leadership. If you'll notice that nearly every paragraph in John 10 makes a clear contrast between Jesus and other leaders. And to understand that, we got to understand that the term shepherd is certainly a metaphor used of God in the Hebrew scriptures, but it's also applied to human leaders. And so people in the Old Testament, like Moses, Joshua, David, Jeremiah, these were all prophets, priests, and kings, mostly kings of Israel and other nations, were called shepherds. They were human leaders, if you will, assigned by the divine shepherd to shepherd God's flock. But as in any vocation, you know, some handle that responsibility well, and others do not. There are healthy, life-giving ways to exercise power, and then there are destructive and selfish ways to exercise power. Prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel report God's disappointment and frustration over the failure of some to shepherd God's people well. Many of these leaders were self-serving, they were negligent, they were uncaring as leaders. They were doing a disservice to God the shepherd as they, you know, quote unquote, led God's people. Well, Jesus picks up on that prophetic tradition with his assessment of the leaders or shepherds who've come before him. In John 10, we read about thieves and robbers who don't enter the pen, the sheep pen, by the gate. Instead, they're trying to jump over the walls. We see that the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. And then Jesus talks about this hired hand who runs for his life when the wolf comes to threaten and attack the sheep. So we kind of wonder, who is Jesus referring to when he talks about these bad leaders, these bad shepherds? And seems to be somebody specific, some group of people he has in mind. It could be that Jesus is referring to the would-be messiahs and the self-proclaimed kings of the Jews, like Athronges the shepherd, or the Herods, or other zealots who rose up during Jesus' lifetime and used violence, literally killing, stealing, and destroying, to try to accomplish their political and religious goals. Their ways, however, led to destruction. Or it could be that Jesus is really referring to the Jewish authorities who used their power to shun and exclude by seeking to kill Jesus and expel his sheep, like, frankly, the people that were standing right in front of him at this point. You see, it's important just a bit to understand what comes before John chapter 10. And there's this story that unfolds in John 8 and 9 about a man who was born blind, and Jesus healed him on the Sabbath. And so this guy, I'm sure, has the best day of his life, but it turns into quite an ordeal because the Pharisees launch this serious investigation into this miracle. They question this man. They question his parents. They are trying to see who did this, or who do they think Jesus is, or is this Jesus the Messiah, and are they telling the truth? And so they go about, by the end of that story in John chapter 9, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, have insulted this man who was healed, and they have thrown him out of the synagogue for, I guess, just having the audacity to celebrate that Jesus healed him of a lifelong condition, and it happened to be on the Sabbath. And so, certainly, some of John's readers late in the first century, maybe early second, could certainly relate to this man being thrown out of the temple or out of the synagogue, because that's what was happening to them at that day. And so there were these, perhaps, authorities, these leaders who were more about expelling and kicking out as opposed to welcoming in. Whoever it is, Jesus clearly has in mind that there are corrupt shepherds who fleece the sheep, but they don't care for them. They don't care for the weak or the sick or the injured or bring back the strays or protect them from those who would do them harm. There is no care or concern for the sheep, only for themselves. And God is not pleased that they are neglecting and really abusing God's flock. But in contrast to these negative portrayals of power, Jesus says, "I am good. I am the good shepherd, and I am the gate. I think we see the goodness of Jesus' leadership in a few ways. For one, Jesus leads people into life at its best, as opposed to destruction. So in John 10, verses 7 through 10, we have this image a couple times of I am the gate. I am the gate for the sheep. Well, what is this all about? What does this image refer to? Well, back in that day, many shepherds created, either built themselves or they were given access to these sheep pens. And that's where the sheep would go to be safe. And in some cultures, and certainly in the Middle East and Far East, at certain times, there would be a common practice where the shepherd of the sheep would lie down in the gate. And the idea was at night, while they were sleeping, they would protect the sheep from wandering away and wandering out, but also protect the sheep from the wolves or the hyenas or the jackals from getting in. And so that image, if that is the image that Jesus has in mind, is of this one who lies down and basically serves as the gate, as a sense of security and safety for the sheep. Clearly, I think that's one angle of looking at the gate. Another angle may be like a more mystical approach, and this is what John is prone to do in his gospel. And perhaps what Jesus is referring to here is how Jesus is the gate, in a sense, to our inner selves. And as we surrender, or as we open ourselves up, we can find union with Christ. We can hear his voice in turn, be effective followers and shepherds of others. And once again, it's through Christ we have access to this full and an abundant life. Or perhaps another angle for the Jesus as the gate is really being the point that Christ is the doorway, is the entry point. Jesus is the way into safety and security and rest, but also the way out to nourishment and abundance and life at its best. And then there's certainly that factor of protection from the spiritually abusive and toxic thieves and robbers and wild animals that would do us harm. I want to show you just a really brief clip of sheep passing through a modern day gate. Take a look at this for a moment. Love the apparent energy and enthusiasm with which the sheep, you know, go through the gate for either rest and safety or for nourishment and life at its best, life in all its abundant fullness. So whatever the exact image is kind of is intended here, the idea is that Christ is the one who gives us access to life at its best, life to the full. Jesus says, I am the gate for the sheep. There's another indicator of the goodness of Jesus' leadership and power, if you will, and that is that Jesus provides self-sacrificing oversight as opposed to self-protective oversight. John 10, verse 11, we hear about this hired hand as another metaphor, and this hired hand runs away when there's a risk, while the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. We see that idea of laying down, of risking his life for the well-being of the sheep, five times in this chapter. We'll get more on that just a little bit later. But obviously, Jesus is here as one who sacrifices for the well-being of the sheep. A third way Jesus shows us good power is that Jesus includes as opposed to excludes. Verse 25 through 30, we read this, actually starting at verse 27. Actually, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. And so here, Jesus, just moments earlier, has heard of or witnessed these Pharisees, in a sense, throwing out a sheep. But Jesus welcomes this man and others like him, and he won't let his sheep be stolen away. It's as if Jesus is saying, look, my sheep may be kicked out of your places of worship, but they will never be stolen out of my flock. There's another passage in 10, verse 16, where we get this picture of the inclusive Christ. He says, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And so Jesus refers to these sheep from other flocks. And clearly his intention is at the very least to say that Gentiles, non-Jewish people, will be welcome into this flock as well as the Jewish people. God's sheep pen stretches beyond the expected boundaries. And that's consistent with what is said of him in John chapter 11. Verse 51 and 52, where the high priest, it was said, prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation, and not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God, to bring them together and make them one. So Jesus is offering this radical claim that here he is, the shepherd of God's flock, typically seen as the shepherd of Israel, but consistent with everything we see about Jesus, he is welcoming others as well. Christ is eager to expand the fold and bring people together under his shepherding care. Now, we've seen two things that kind of are themes that emerge from John chapter 10, and I want to offer a third one. And that is the good shepherd is closely and personally connected to the sheep. So how is it that God shepherds God's people? Well, I think we just take a look at what John chapter 10 has to say and how it has lived itself out in the life of Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus says, he calls out his sheep by name. There's this very personal connection that this good shepherd has with his sheep. And as a result of familiarity and time spent an interest and a concern for each individual sheep, each individual person, this good shepherd calls his sheep by name. He also knows his sheep. We see that word knows five times in John 10. And it's this idea of this intimate knowledge that is, I think, gained through this daily interaction. And as we apply it to ourselves, we can think of how the Christ knows our needs, our tendencies, our hurts, our joys. We are known by God, and we know God as well. Jesus also says the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Again, this five times, this sacrificial, other-centered kind of care and concern comes up. And then as well, another function of this personal connection is that this good shepherd, that Jesus, seeks to protect us from the negative influence of negligent abusive leaders, even at great personal risk. You know, he was willing to confront those who were in power at the time, even when they wanted to stone him and get rid of him. These are ways that Jesus tends to his flock, how he cares for God's people. But these verses also talk to us about how then we as people follow this good shepherd. Is that we listen to his voice. We follow him. To understand that a little bit more, we can think about sheep pens back in the ancient days. One of those kinds of pens is one that is built by a shepherd with rocks out in the pasture, out in the fields. And as they go out, they establish a place where they're going to be for a while. The shepherd will build it, and it's a place where the sheep can sleep at night. And then after the flock, they pack up, they move on to other fertile ground, and then maybe next year at a similar time, they will come back and they'll use that same pen. But a second kind of pen is close to the city or the village where the shepherd lives and all the other shepherds live. And so all the shepherds would come back and they would go to a pen that is owned by someone, and they would hire watchmen to watch over all the sheep that were gathered in the pen. And this was a mixture. Different owners had different sheep in that pen. But then when it was time to go out to pasture, the sheep would only respond to their shepherd's distinctive voice, their shepherd's call. And so that's how there was an ability to identify, this is my shepherd, and the sheep hear my voice. Again, voice is a theme that repeats over and over again in this chapter. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. And they won't respond to the stranger's voice. As well, these sheep trust that the shepherd will care for them, and so they follow him. I think really this is a great picture of discipleship. How Jesus goes out ahead, he calls his own sheep by name, and then he leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. You see, Jesus leads, we listen to his voice, and we follow him. We do so because we trust him and know that his way is the way to life at its best. Well, as we've been kind of going through this series, we really want to provide a way for us to stop and reflect, maybe even journal on some questions as we interact with these I am statements, and today with these two I am statements of Jesus. And so we've been asking with these prompts, you know, he is, you know, what does this text, what does this chapter say about Jesus? Also, I will be, what does this say about who we hope to become? And then I will, what can I say or do to move towards who Jesus is and who I am becoming? So I assume that you've maybe had some responses as you've listened this morning or read this text along with me. But here's how I'm responding. Yours may be different. But as I think about he is, I understand that, look, not only did Jesus of Nazareth embody the divine shepherd as he interacted with people in the first century Palestine, but there are passages in the New Testament like Hebrews and 1 Peter and Revelation that refer to the risen Christ as that great shepherd of the sheep, or the shepherd and overseer of our souls, and the lamb at the center of the heavenly throne who will be our shepherd, leading us to shelter and springs of living water. So it's not only about that human Jesus of Nazareth, in his day, but the risen Christ is our good shepherd who was and is to come, is available to us even now. And so as I reflect upon who he is, who is this good shepherd? I see that he is the caring, divine leader who is worth following. He's the one that we can trust, one who knows us by name, one who seeks our good, who restores our soul, who fills us and satisfies and gives us what we need, who brings us back when we wander away, and who gives us life to the full, life at its best. This is the Christ. And so I think as we gaze upon the Good Shepherd, we can allow that image of God's attitude towards us to penetrate our hearts and minds, and to replace less helpful images of God. Jesus is our Good Shepherd. When it comes to I will be, I'm thinking about, you know, I will seek to be a good shepherd. You know, I think we, many of us at least, have leadership responsibilities in some form or another. We influence others, whether that's at home or at work or in our neighborhoods. And if we have a position of leadership or power, how can we lead as a good shepherd? I think we can be reminded and challenged that the way of the Good Shepherd is one of nurture, one of inclusion, one of self-sacrifice, one of compassion. And so, can I grow as a good shepherd? And then we, as God's people, collectively, corporately, can be seen as like kind of these little incarnations of the Good Shepherd and of the gate. And with that idea, you know, perhaps we are being challenged to be the doorway, welcoming people to Jesus where they can find life to the full, life at its best. We can embody the compassionate and caring and restoring and including concern of the Good Shepherd as we interact with other sheep day by day. And as we listen to the voice and follow after our Good Shepherd, we welcome others to join us on that path towards life at its best. And then I will. What does it take for me to kind of get there, to grow in that? And the thing that really stood out to me was just this idea of listening to the voice of Jesus. You know, today we have access to so many different voices calling for us to follow them. You know, advertisers, politicians, media influencers, commenters, some of whom claim to speak for God, right? But sheep seek to listen to the shepherd's voice. And so for me, it's about, I think, continuing to learn to discern and follow the voice of Christ. And I think that just invites us to ask the question, as we hear of all these voices, does this sound like Jesus? Does this voice sound like Jesus? You know, several years ago, as I was kind of rediscovering Jesus in the Gospels and kind of trying to reorient my faith around this Jesus, I was still at the time also listening to some other religiously and politically influential voices, especially on the radio, sometimes what I was reading. But I came, as I continued to grow along and go along on this path, I began to ask myself, look, do these voices sound like Jesus? And as I kept listening and as I kept, you know, learning more and rediscovering the Jesus of the Gospels and the Jesus of the New Testament, it was like, no, they really don't. And so I began to try to filter out those competing voices and just continue to try to listen to Jesus and to those who know and follow him and kind of and drown out the noise from other voices that would try to get me to go in a different way. What are the other voices that we hear? You know, maybe it's a voice promoting violence to attain religious or political goals. Or maybe it's voices that want to throw people out rather than welcome them in. Or maybe it's voices of fear or worry or hatred or power or greed or self-centeredness or competition. Our challenge, I think, is to filter out those voices and discern and focus in and follow the voice of Jesus instead. We hear the voice of Christ as the Spirit brings the scriptures to life. We hear the voice of Christ as we listen to the words and see the examples of women and men and children who know Jesus. We hear the voice of Christ through quieting ourselves to hear the Spirit of Christ within us. And as we listen, let's try to hear him call us by name. Let's listen for the voice of Jesus. Let's finish with a prayer. Would we join me in prayer? Good Shepherd, help us to hear you call us by name. Good Shepherd, help us to discern your voice and follow you. Good Shepherd, restore us, refresh us, comfort us, draw us back when we wander away. Good Shepherd, help us reflect your compassionate concern as we lead those around us. Amen. As we move towards communion, I just want to remind you of these verses from John chapter 10. So I am the good shepherd, Jesus says. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. Jesus clearly here alludes to his death and resurrection. Let's reflect on that as we share communion today.